You're with SBS Radio. Find more great stories in your language at sbs.com.au.
Wadamuli, and welcome to NITV Radio. I'm Kerry Lee Harding. And coming up for you now, our regular science and technology segment with Wiradjuri woman and journalist Ray Johnston. Welcome to the program, Ray.
Thanks for having me, sis.
Great to have you back again. We've got a number of things to talk through on our science and technology segment this week. And first up, you're going to tell us about a health app.
Yeah, I'm actually going to tell you about how health apps in general, they're oversharing your information. Mm. So researchers, they've done a big analysis of more than 20,000 health-related phone apps, and they've found some pretty serious problems with privacy in regards to them. So the researchers say that collecting personal user information is a really pervasive practice, and that we need to be more informed on the privacy of these apps and the risks before we install them and use them. Because of the 2.8 million apps on Google Play, and there's 1.96 million apps on the App Store,
wow,
around 99,000 of them are medical or health and fitness related apps. And, you know, they're including the management of health conditions and checking symptoms and steps and calorie counters and, you know, trackers, and they often contain a lot of sensitive health information. And app developers are routinely and legally sharing our user data, and we're getting dodgy information about privacy in regards to these apps. It's really common that we're not getting the right information. And these apps collect less user data than other types of apps, like Facebook, for example, but 88% of them are allowed to access and potentially share your personal data. For example, about a third of them can collect your email address and share it, and about a quarter of them can identify the mobile phone tower that your device is connected to. So that's some pretty serious information, some pretty private information as well. And around 28% of the apps, they're not offering any kind of privacy policy at all. And then another 25% of them are breaching their own privacy policy in the way that they behave. But only 1.3% of user reviews talk about concerns about privacy. So this is something that we need to be a lot more aware of, which apps we're sharing our information with and what their privacy policy looks like.
And as you mentioned there, only 1.3% of user reviews actually means we need to be more aware of what we're dealing with as consumers, sis.
Yeah, it's a much bigger problem than people realise. Otherwise, they'd be complaining about it more, I think. So, yeah, before you hand over any of your information, I know that reading terms and conditions can take a long time, but it's worth it when you're sharing, you know, private or sensitive personal health information with almost anyone.
Such an important story to talk about on our science and technology segment today. Now we go from talking about health apps that could be oversharing on your behalf to talking about a huge prehistoric croc or river boss which prowled southeast Queensland waterways, sis. What can you tell us about this story?
Yeah, a new species of huge prehistoric croc. Millions of years ago, it was roaming southeast Queensland's waterways. It's been documented by University of Queensland researchers. Now, this is one of the largest crocs to ever have inhabited this continent. And the name of the new species, it honours the First Nations peoples of the Darling Downs area. It incorporates words from languages of the Burungum and Waka Waka nations. So it's called Gunga Murundu, and it means river boss, while the species name, Maundala, means hole head. And that's because there's large hole-like openings of the skull where the muscles are attached. And at the moment, it's really difficult to estimate the exact size of this croc, since all we have is the back of its skull, but it was really big. That's, the researchers are saying that the skull would have been at least 80 centimetres long. So that's nearly a metre just for the skull. And based on comparisons with living crocs, this means a total body length of about 7 metres, which is just huge. And it's on par with, you know, the biggest crocs recorded in the Indo-Pacific. And they also had the skull CT scanned. And from that, they were able to look at the size of the brain cavity as well. And while we don't know how old this fossil is exactly, they say it's probably between around 2 to 5 million years old. And it belonged to a group of crocodilians named Thomasomines. And today there's only one living species of Thomasomine, which is found in the Malay Peninsula and parts of Indonesia. So it's a pretty awesome discovery.
Such a good discovery indeed. I've got to love that. Riverboss is the name of that huge prehistoric croxis. Now we go from talking about riverboss to talking about the weather, and apparently the heat spells doom for Aussie marsupials. How so, sis?
Yeah, so when animals are hot, they eat less. And this is something that's been really overlooked in wild animals, and this is according to new research from the Australian National University. So this means that climate change could be contributing to more deaths among our iconic marsupials, like the greater glider, for example, than we previously thought. So hot weather, it puts all animals off their food, even humans. We can deal with it fairly well. We usually have plenty of fat reserves and lots of different food options, but it's a lot more serious for animals that have highly specialised diets, like the greater gliders. And if they don't eat regularly, they don't meet their nutritional requirements to stay alive. And they also get most of their water from their food as well. So not eating leads to dehydration. And even nighttime temperatures can get hot enough to cause nocturnal animals to lose their appetite during heat waves. And we've had a lot of focus until now on the impact of climate change on food being its quality and its quantity. But you know, the bigger picture here is that those hot animals eat less even if they have plenty of food. Mm. So marsupials also have trouble processing the natural toxins in eucalyptus leaves at high temperatures. But even just hot temperatures alone can stop them from eating enough to stay alive. And there are a few things that we need to do to address this issue, including protecting sources of food. You know, if you're eating less, the small amount that you do eat, it needs to be more nutritious. And not all eucalypt have the same level of nutrients. So we need to work out which eucalypts are more nutrients dense and protect those areas of the forest that have the best quality food for these animals. And when we're looking at restoring forests as well, we need to plant those more nutritious food trees. And we can also look closely at what makes some forests cooler and what contributes to forests getting hotter so that we can protect and expand those cooler microclimates. So there are solutions here, but it is an issue that we really need to be aware of.
Sounds like the hot weather is indeed not good for our Aussie marsupials at all, Ray. Now we go from talking about that topic to more than half of the world's rivers actually run dry at least once a year. Is this right, sis?
Yes, yeah, more than half of the world's rivers, they stop flowing for at least one day per year. And wow, this is new research. And it shows that it's more common than we previously thought, which means we need to look at changing our river management strategies. You know, most river courses, they include rivers or streams that will sometimes stop flowing. And these are expected to increase in the coming decades due to changing climates and human activity. And the researchers involved in this, they made a model to predict river flows. And it was huge. It represented 23.3 million kilometres of the global river network. And they found that between 51% and 60% of rivers and streams by length, they do stop flowing for at least one day a year. And that included 95% of rivers found in extremely hot and dry areas, like in northern Australia. They're more likely to stop flowing. Mm. And this is information that needs to be included in our river models to make sure that we do have, you know, better river management strategies in place that will actually protect the biodiversity and ecosystems of these kinds of rivers. It's really interesting research.
That is really interesting. Who would have thought that our world's rivers run dry at least once a year? I had no idea, sis.
No, I would have thought that, you know, most of our rivers and streams, you know, they're coming from the tops of mountains and glaciers and all of these icy kind of areas, they keep flowing. most of the year, but all over the rest of the world, we're seeing dry riverbeds and it's increasing. So it's good information to know.
Thank you so much for joining us for our regular science and technology segment today, Wiradjuri woman and journalist Rae Johnston. It's been an absolute pleasure, as it is every week.
No worries, sis. Talk to you next week.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.